Blog Talk Radio.
Trouble, double, double, trouble, double. To come, Rosie, tell me to come. So she didn't have a daughter, she didn't have a son. She said the lift doesn't run, run up the stairs. Trouble, double, double.
Trouble, double, double.
Got it because niggas was violent. Knew I had to pull it, the bullet or the ballot. It's like
like the parable of the story of the talents. When my people took it paper with no margin, turning ghettos to gardens like Ron Finley. Through stages of life, the world's my Wembley. I MC from the point of entry of peace. Some find it don't do the paper routing, and some find they peace through praise and shouting, and some find they peace through pulling the shade like Malcolm. I found my peace making these albums peace. Ground 0% of phobia. They love a trophy, a myth, quote. They even wrote me out of all accounts, other than show them a small amount. Till I called them out, I'm what the story is all about. My arrival wasn't willingly, nah, but that's chillingly the truth. Now I'm fear for shots from cops killing me. They on a hunt for the plug, and we the auxiliary, the black power and love. I'm all the above, but find peace in the culture. I'm responsible to saving every piece of the puzzle, every article, the page. I'm at peace in the struggle, I'm awake and not afraid, while I'm channeling my energy from particle to wave. Like Mandela seated on Robben Island, wise like a prophet arriving from the Highlands. Look, I'm not here for any kind of problem. Keep me out of your gossip column. Thank you, I'm calm and tranquil. At the time and place you I shine. Word to God, I'm divine and graceful. The grind could break you. If you concentrate, you can find your faith with a higher conscience. Take you that peace.
Save me. How I got myself in this place? See, I got a job with a pimp I pay, and none of the money the team, kid. Cause you never know when it's
over.
Will you be standing when it's
over?
And don't my tongue down. What you gonna do when it's
over?
Will you be here for your child to have a shoulder?
Chimpanzee, them a make big money. This is how the media pillages. On TV, the picture is savages and villages. And the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids. Stereotyping the image of the images. And this is what the image is. You buy a car, keep on stand. All of a sudden you are set at Indiana Jones. And I see all the gold and see all the scrolls and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzis I've ever seen and I've ever known. Put the words on this place that the world can see and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like we'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them are free when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them feet can defeat and them could have never clone. A spiritual DNA that lives in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. Savali, that's patience. That's what the old folks told me. Can you get with that? Discovering the world before this world. A world buried in time. Uncovered with rhymes. It gets no realer.
We born not knowing. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was flat, if you went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round, if the shape changed again, everybody would have thought lost. The average man can't prove of most of the things that he chooses to seek of. And still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Scholars teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose starts running. Get fixed up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with a wet mud. Can you read signs? Can you read stars? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds now?
It's crazy. People the truth, you don't know how they're gonna react. You're scared of wrongdoers, people that's just ignorant. You're scared of the truth. We patient for now. Who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made a
Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruin. Trying to get paper. Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch niggas play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsies, seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, so over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it.
Yo, turn this motherfucking shit up.
They've also gained recognition and respect as human beings much faster than you and I. Just 10 years ago on the African continent, our people were colonized. They were suffering all forms of colonization, oppression, exploitation, degradation, humiliation, discrimination, and every other kind of Asian. And in a short time, they have gained more independence, more recognition, more respect as human beings than you and I have. And you and I live in a country which is supposed to be the citadel of education, freedom, justice, democracy, and all of those other pretty sounding words. We want freedom by any means necessary. We want justice by any means necessary. We want equality by any means necessary. We don't feel that in 1964, living in a country that is supposedly based upon freedom, and supposedly the leader of the free world, we don't think that we should have to sit around and wait for some segregationist congressmen and senators and a president from Texas in Washington, D.C. to make up their minds that our people are due now some degree of civil rights. No, we want it now or we don't think anybody should.
I got loyalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though ambition flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed, this that I got realness. I just kill shit cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound, the engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks, they Corvette tire skirt, the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Offend you, this is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, furnace, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead, redemption, scholars, fathers, dead, with kids and I wish dead, forgiveness, yeah, soldier's DNA, born inside the beast, my expertise checked out in second grade, when I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay, at 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate, and I'm gon' shine, like I'm supposed to, antisocial, extrovert, and excellent, mean an extrovert, and absentness, what the fuck you heard? Struck my nerve, and that's a rip gonna be this case. The reason my power's here, the truth and the prophecy. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA.
This is why I say that hip hop has done more damage to young African Americans than racism in recent years.
I live about my DNA.
This is my heritage, all I'm inheriting. Money and power, the maker, I'm emeritus. Tell me something, you motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I'd rather die than to listen to you. My DNA not for imitation, your DNA an abomination. This how I dish when you in the matrix, out your bullets, reaping what you're sowing, stacking up the footage, living on the go and sleeping in the pillar, sipping from a Grammy, walking in the building, diamond in the ceiling, marble on the floor, speeches out the window, peeking out the window, baby in the pool, Godfather goes, only Lord knows. I've been going hammer, dodging paparazzi, freaking through the cameras, eat it for a daughter's rock, wearing sandals, yoga on the Monday, stretching to the planet, watching all the snakes, curving all the fakes, phone never on, I don't camera stakes, I don't compromise, I just penetrate. Sex, money, murder, these are the breaks, these are the times. Level number 9, look up in the sky, tennis on the way, tennis on the way, tennis on the way. Motherfucker, I got winners on the way. You ain't shit without a buddy on your belt. You ain't shit without a ticket on your plate. You ain't sick enough to put it on yourself. You ain't rich enough to hit the ladder gate. Tell me when destruction gonna be my fate. Gonna be a fate, gonna be a fate. Peace to the world, let it rotate. Sex, money, murder, I do.
Tupac Shakur is a child of the 60s. Tupac Shakur, born out of the spirit of the revolution of the 60s. Tupac Shakur, fire in his bones. Huh? Boldness and rebellion in his blood. Born from his beautiful, bold Black Panther mama, Afeni. Sitting in the jail cell, a revolutionary woman carrying the fruit of life, mocking the child in her womb, mocking the child with rebellion, mocking the child with insurrection, mocking the child with a spirit to not go along with what's been going on. When you got a generation like that, you've got to work with them. You've got to mold them and shape them and fashion them
to our program for the future.
Economy right now, it's extremely supporting of the president and his policy.
FBI scientists have found chemical traces consistent with a bomb or a missile on a piece of wreckage. Police using clubs and tear gas against demonstrators.
Mother, so-and-so and a white fascist. Like they said, you're getting some of your own medicine.
then the rest will fall behind. Tell me who's got control of your mind, your worldview. Is it the news or the movie you taking your girl to? Know what I'm saying, cause Uncle Sam got a plan. If you examine what they telling us, then you will understand what they planting in the seeds of the next generation. Feeding our children miseducation. No one knows if there's UFOs or any life on Mars, or what they doing when they up in the stars. Because I don't believe a word of what the president said. He's filling our heads with lies, got us hypnotized when he be speaking in cold words about crime and poverty, drugs, welfare, prisons, guns, and robbery. It really means us. There's no excuse for the slander, but what's good for the goose is still good for the gander, see.
I don't believe Bob Marley got me cancer. 31 years ago, I would have been a panther. They killed you because they knew we had the answer. The views that you see in the news is propaganda.
Black power, black nation. You're tuned into In Defense of the People weekly Tuesday night radio broadcast at 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, People's Political Party National Chair, Nat Turner, co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, myself, and our engineers on the ones and twos, National Minister of Communication, Sister Amina, also known as our assault technician, calling each and every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time at 845-277-9266. Press 1 to participate to get in on tonight's topic. Tonight's topic, Jesus was a revolutionary. Once again, Jesus was a revolutionary. We're going to open up our phone lines to our national chair, Black.
Broke up, Conrad. Can you hear me? Yeah, you kind of broke up. I was asking, could you hear me? Black Power, you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Conrad.
All right, yeah, well, we're having some... Shit, we barely out of the gate, man. We barely out of the gate, man. Yeah, say that. We barely out of the gate, man. Black power. All power to the people.
Black power.
Yeah, man, what up? You all rule. Yeah, man, we chose this subject. Things come around, for a reason. It's time and a place. Just move in the spirit of our ancestors, and they reach out to us. They can reach out to us at any moment, any time, even in our sleep, going about our daily operation in the day or at night, trying to keep, a roof over our heads, food in our stomachs and clothes on our back. And just a subject, this topic just came up. Basically, we as black people, collectively, we've been raised in the Baptist environment, black Baptist environment, as Christians, Christianity. And that's due to the legacy of slavery. Everything has a point of origin, and we always try to focus on that to, try to make a point or to make sense. Doesn't make sense, so to speak. But just how we got to this stage, pretty much every subject, we couldn't hold without mentioning slavery, that's a fact. It's not a theory or anything, but we don't allow people to manipulate us, giving us the fruit on the tree, or the branches or whatever, and you know, you can cut branches off of a tree, you know, bushes or what have you, you know, the leaves and stuff, they'll grow back. You know, so they'll grow back. But if you cut the root of the tree, hit it at its root, then the tree is not going to grow back, you know. So we always try to come from that perspective to go forward. There's one thing, remember, how you going to, or something like how you going to go forward or progress if you don't know where you've been, you know, to make the connection, you know, our existence, our experience in this country. There are those who, you know, there's different, you know, religious affiliations and whatnot. And so, you know, black people, we've gone from one, you know, like psychology, so to speak, our ideology, rather, from one stage to the next. And so, like, when we came here by force, brought here by force, by violence, a lot of us had been the inheritors of our ancestors' so-called religious belief on the mother continent, which was Islam. And other than Islam, all the religious groups' heads have looked at our indigenous thought system and then placed labels on it, you know, such names like animism, polytheism, paganism, or even naturalism, you know, when we are the mothers and fathers of all those religions. So if we had been pagan, polytheistic, whatever, you know, then the children had to have been the same thing. You know, no woman gives birth to a set of twins, and then those twins, knowing, of course, growing up, you know, around and being part of their mother's life and vice versa, from the time they were infants to, you know, they grow up and be young men, and then say, you know, they never had a mother, that they popped up on earth, was no mother, you know. It would be trying to, you know, defy the laws of nature. But just a little backdrop to where we come from, to where we at now, and the conditions, the material conditions, you know, we won't be able to say that enough. We've come to a point of understanding what we like to consider a higher form of understanding in taking the experience, the trials and tribulations, whatnot, that we go through, and the material aspects of it, which is placed within the conditions. And so from that, you get these realities, right? And these realities are like concrete, you know. They are bold, you know, concrete, hardcore, brutal realities. And because of that, we're trying to come up with a solution to alleviate, you know, those realities by trying to transform the conditions. So materially, we can live collectively in peace, cohesion, love, humaneness, and last but not least, spiritually. You know what I'm saying? This political education class, what we like to refer to it as, paint a very, very vivid picture to give you an idea of, like, what it is, what it's about. We believe that that is the most practical way, which will bring about the revolutionary transformation of society and a removal from a decadent stage, which has managed to dress itself up in very sophisticated forms, managed to camouflage yourself in very you know, clever ways and stuff, you know, outwardly projecting onto us the material world, the material accumulation of things, which we're told are goods and services, right? And that is what stamps our lives, whether or not we were successful or not successful, right? There's a movie, an old movie, where, you know, we speak about status symbols, right, and so forth. And so because of the playing field, the landscape, it's too many niggas for but a few seats. And so another segment of us, having recognized that and realized that, decided to get off on their own and try to wield the impression that is a sort of natural thing, and try to use, you know, like animals in nature, you know, tigers hang out with tigers, you know, bears hang out with bears, you know, whales swim with whales, and, you know, and so forth, you know, birds, the same feather, flock together. In the human world, what do you have? You have, you know, Crips roll with Crips, Bloods roll with Bloods, GDs roll with GDs, Vice Lords roll with Vice Lords, and so forth, right? And these are forced conditions, though. These are forced material conditions due to the circumstances, you see. Whereas the bears weren't forced to hang out with bears, lions weren't forced to hang out with lions and whatnot. You see what I'm saying? So we can separate the bullshit, you know, the real from the illusion. So these are contrived things. And that particular group has decided that it would only give so much of itself and inflate that as, you know, to being, you know, that's the shit, you know, that's the truth, you know what I'm saying? Facts, right? Like the young people say. And pretty much lead the people to nowhere. And so what we learn to do is look at the things that we collectively take very emotionally, the things that we take, you know, very, very, like, in terms of endearment, you know, like on the streets, you know, that's my nigga, straight up, no equivocations, you know what I'm saying, terms of endearment, in using a, you know, such brutal language, right? So we look and see that the thing that's pretty much a common thing due to our upbringing under the colonizer and collectively being the colonized mind. So we took on the colonizer's religion. We took on the colonizer's language. We speak in English. We took on the colonizer's clothes, his form of clothes that he produced. We took on the colonizer's eating dietary habits, which has caused so much affliction, you know, cancer, diabetes, and all these other things and stuff that has plagued us. When I think about, you know, that type of shit, you know, I think about black women. I think about how black women have suffered under such inhumane conditions, disguised as, again, luxury. You know, you can give your girlfriend that you cheated on a diamond ring to express how you're sorry, right? And that's due to the fact that we live in a patriarchal society. You know, white male dominant rule. You know, his psychopathology, which affects us collectively and has made us sick collectively. So we try to find remedies for it. And the one remedy, you know, for a lot of us would appear to be the church. And so, of course, in the Baptist church, you know, the standard is the Christian formulation of religion or religious aspects of faith or whatever, and of course the Bible being the rock. So we want to bring this out, and that we know the rock of all rocks would be, you know, collectively black people's belief in Jesus, in the Jesus of the New Testament, the Jesus of the Bible. But the New Testament was written in Greek. And so these terminology, the terms that we use, you know, in the English, translated out of the Greek and so forth, you know, the name Jesus that we know. You know, there's those who come up and who learn to study, you know, gain the knowledge and stuff back in the 80s. And, you know, one of the things that we really, that really struck us was that, that how could there be a Jesus when there was no letter J around, right? But just to point of how effective our belief system can be. So when you look at black people's conditions collectively, the transformation of it, and you look at those who have come along and have tried to solve the problems or pretend to solve the problems or, you know, build something, start something, form something, you know, the activism, the militant, the radical, and so forth. Last but not least, the revolutionary. So drawing a correlation, and it just dawns upon us that if you look at Jesus in the New Testament, and you could draw the conclusion, and I say it could, you could draw the conclusion that Jesus was a revolutionary. Not only a revolutionary, but would have been called today a socialist. He would have been opposed to the capitalist system, which we understand is the enemy of the people. Again, you can't go anywhere on this earth and find black and brown indigenous people having a good time under the capitalist rule, under the capitalist system, because it's inherently juxtaposed to the collective. And the only good that the collective can do or be for the capitalists is as consumers, is as the mass population that consumes the capitalist whims, the material consumption, right? And so therefore, the two are juxtaposed to each other. And when you look at the Jesus of the New Testament, you see the same thing. You see that the people who have become the exploited, with the Marxists, the socialists, the communists, referred to as the proletariat and the lumpen proletariat, especially the lumpen proletariat. The lumpen proletariat, or the lumpen, L-U-M-P-E-N, is pretty much Russian terminology for the unemployed, the denizens of society. It shows George Washington, Abraham Dead and Stinking Lincoln referred to black people as denizens and not citizens. And that only because of the contradiction that had arose between the North and the South, that they had only become some type of pawn in the game, which people think that the Civil War was fought over, which couldn't be further from the truth. Regardless of what professor been teaching how long in any school, straight up. And so those who have been at the bottom, those who have been turned into outcasts, in Roman terminology, in Rome and Greece, they used such terms as serfs. The patrician class was the ancient equivalent of the wealthy, the ones who controlled the means of production, the ones who had the whip and controlled the rest of the population, as in Rome, until by law of nature, this relationship comes to a head and it produces someone from amongst the masses takes on the role of the leader, the liberator. And in Rome, that was Spartacus. And so the Europeans make these movies, these, you know, Hollywood movies and whatnot. And, you know, they make the movie Spartacus, right? I can't think of Russell Crowe, I think, plays Spartacus, I think. And so this person who rises up and leads the charge and the people liberate themselves from their oppressor. And the Jesus of the New Testament is more in tune or inclined to be with what the Russians refer to as the lumpen. And the lumpen could play a potential role in the revolutionary overthrow of the ruling class. Whereas the proletariat is the source of labor, meaning those who go, you know, I remember, you know, punch the clock, you know, the 9 to 5, the graveyard shift, right? And this is what the Marxists see as the linchpin of the revolution or the overthrow of the ruling class. Now, when it comes to black people, African people, it cannot stay in the realm of class, that it has to enter the realm also of racism and white supremacy. And the Jesus of the New Testament would have been with the those who have been made to be the outcasts, and that he broke bread with them. And all of the persons or individuals that are being held as prisoners of war in these concentration camps for crimes, you know, such as thievery and whatnot, and the more serious crimes, right, you know, on up to murder, rape, and so forth, right? Those who were homeless, those who had mental issues, physical disabilities and whatnot. And a lot of that came from those who served in the white ruling class's military, going around in certain parts of the world, exercising the interests of the white ruling class imperial strategy, tactic, or ambitions of dominating the natural resources in different parts of the world. Which 9 times out of 10 would be found in lands of native people, indigenous people, black and brown people, you know, Africa, Latin America, and so forth, right? Asia. And you look and see the same people, and these are the people that Jesus would be with today. And that he would have to transform them from out of one stage into the next. And that he was clear on his position, meaning he was clear on his position with all these things like class, his sentiments toward what would be today the president or the prime minister of you know, foreign countries, how they refer to their, you know, to their heads. In Russia, it was called the Tsar. You know what I'm saying? And so I want to point out the scriptures that, you know, would give you an idea. Trying to see which one I want to start with. The story about Jesus. Okay. I'll start with Caesar, all right, where they were asking Jesus his sentiments on Caesar. And so, you know, and I'm going to read, you know, the specific chapter, you know, just to, you know, not the verbatim, it, and just to try to read it specifically, and you know, we go open up. And let's see, that's Matthew 22:21. Okay, let's see here. You know, 1 second. All right. I'm going to start a little bit before that, when you know, the Jesus is being sort of quizzed or mind games, trick questions and whatnot with I believe, with the Pharisees. And when you talk about the most important thing, when he says, for many are called, but few are chosen, that is something that, you know, I don't know if it's all black militant groups today. It's sort of like a philosophy, you know, today. You know what I'm saying? You have some groups that have a whole lot of people in them. We have some groups, but few. You know what I'm saying? And that's due to the nature of how far you willing to go with it. And the farther you go, maybe the more dangerous it gets, especially when you're under the rule of somebody else, iron fist. That's verse 14. For many are called, but few are chosen. Then went the Pharisees and took counsel how they might entangle him in his talk. There it is right there. That's verse 15 and so on. And they sent out unto him their disciples with the Herodians, saying, Master, we know that thou art true and teachest the way of God in truth. Neither carest thou for any man, for thou regardest not the person of men. Tell us therefore, what thinkest thou? Is it lawful to give tribute unto Caesar or not? But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, Why tempt ye me, ye hypocrites? Shew me, the word we say show now, back there it was shoot, S-A-G-W. Shew me the tribute money. And they brought unto him a penny, and he said unto them, Whose is this image and superscription? They say unto him, Caesar's. Then said he unto them, Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. When they heard these words, they marveled and left him and went their way. They marveled and left and went their way because they could not refute what he was saying. They couldn't contradict him. Caesar was the contradiction. Caesar was the contradiction. So he drew the line. You know, he drew the line with Caesar. Caesar being the producer of the money, with his image on it, his own emblazoned money, which made him master of finance, master of money. So which means he could dominate and rule and oppress everybody else except those who did his bidding. And today that Caesar is the United States president, whether he's a Republican or a Democrat. In Britain, in London, that's the prime minister. And so forth in these other countries. It is what it is. There are some who are black Caesars, white man in black skin, that you may find in Africa, some cat calling himself the president of a country in Africa. But he drew the line. Yet these same men would profess in the Christ, the cathedral, the church, and what have you. And they're walking contradictions. And so right then and there, Jesus was against them. He stood not with them. The ancient system in Rome is no more different than the present system today, the capitalist system. And so he was against it. So when you look at the relationship, the power relationship between a lot of black people who go to church and claiming Jesus on one end and rolling with Caesar on the other end, all of a sudden it's selective amnesia. Now, I'm not foolish to the point where I don't recognize the relationship. I've said it before that it's a power relationship. It ain't but two types of us. There are unwilling accomplices and willing accomplices. In other words, the unwilling accomplices are forced accomplices. And that is due to the power relationship that black people collectively have with the state, the modern day Caesar. Again, regardless if he's a Democrat or Republican, when the Democrats get in office, the system don't change. It's just the symbol changes. When the Republicans get in office, the system don't change. The symbol changes. They have to take down what is the elephant and put up the jackass. The jackass and the elephant. Even though they look nothing like each other, not even remotely like each other, both of them yet are proponents of the same system that Jesus would be opposed to had he been here today, right now, at this very moment. And hanging out on the Good Friday night where you think you'd find him at, this coming Friday at midnight. From the looks of it, I think that where we at, we find him under the bridge where the homeless at, where the dope addicts at, who pushing heroin, who shooting at heroin in their veins, who are homeless. You know, those who are hustling out on the streets, women, and so forth. And there are those who want to make these claims and all this shit. These music award shows that arrive annually, and the artist gets up and be chosen as the album of the year, the new artist of the year, and whatnot. And the first thing that artist gets up there and do, one or two things. He want to thank his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, for allowing him to be up on that stage receiving that award. Or he'll thank his fans. I want to thank my fans. And some say, well, what's the point here? The whole point is that if that really was something more than just words, then according to Jesus, you would have to emulate him. You would have to model yourself after him. And when you model yourself after him, you model yourself after him in a relationship with the people. Other than that, you are doing pretty much no more, no less than the Republican, the Democrat, the Catholics. And again, this is based on a power relationship, so it's understandable. But at some point, that individual must become responsible at some point. That's just like the little dudes on the streets, you know. You responsible for this, you responsible for that. You had a choice to make. You know, the white man didn't put that gun in your hand to pull the trigger and kill that little brother. The white man didn't do it, you did it. You had a decision, a choice to go to school or drop out. You chose to drop out. And it's amazing how this choice thing seems to be selective when it's appropriate. Those who are bringing this choice thing to the forefront can seem to not see themselves when they have to make their choice and the choice applies to them. The claim of Christianity or the Christian or those who believe in Jesus as their Lord and Savior. And this material world, the material conditions, the material factor of our existence in this part of the world, in this country, can set us up very easily. And we become dupes and pawns in the game, and therefore we're trying to serve two masters. When it's convenient, we serve Jesus, and then when it's convenient, we serve him alone. Instead of looking at Mammon and valuing Jesus more than Mammon and offering Mammon so that individual can be wholesome, can be true, And this is as clear as it gonna get. You know, when you take the present conditions or the present situation and you apply the Jesus of the New Testament, what do you get? So we know, according to the scripture, that Jesus had no place for Caesar in anywhere. And that today the Caesar is the white capitalist and his black and brown, red and yellow flunkies who are willing to roll with him in order to enjoy the material comforts of life. And this is where black people find themselves at right now collectively. This is the hole that we find ourselves in. I don't make a claim to anything that I don't stand on, you know, as an individual. But collectively, I love my people like any other person from any other tribe or group or ethnic affiliation does the same and practice it. He lives by it. I don't think anyone has to worry about being perfect or anything like that. I think it's the consistency and the love and the dedication for what happens to take place to your people, with your people. And so to wrap that up, Jesus as opposed to Caesar, there was no middle ground with Caesar. Something that used to strike me. I remember hearing somebody, you know, talk about, you know, riches and whatnot, and you know, being wealthy and stuff like that. You know, being, you know, there's nothing wrong with being a millionaire, stuff like that. And I can't quite remember all of it, but I remember the show. The person had said, well, Jesus could have had it all. You know, he could have ate off gold plates and drunk out of gold chalices and had, you know, like what they call, you know, maids and servants and, you know, women fanning him, you know, doing his toes or pedicure and getting the manicure and everything, being served, you know. You don't even have to lift the eating utensil to his mouth. And could have wore the finest of linen, you know. But he didn't. And that really struck me, considering, you know, the biblical narrative of Jesus' power. You know, how you said to heal the lame and the blind, you know, made the lame walk and the blind see, you know. But that really struck me, you know, something heavy there. And I was like, yeah, no shit. So why didn't he? You know, why didn't, you know, but it was a sheer contradiction. And this is what we attempting to do. This is what we attempting to do. Let me take a look at the time. All right. We good. So the next one, the money changes, the chapter before. That will be chapter 21. You know, it's kind of a little, not weird, but, you know, just, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, it's not Bible class, but again, it's something we want to, you know, Jesus was a revolutionary, you know, and just giving examples, you know, to make a point here, right? They say, and the multitude said, this is verse 11 of starting at chapter 21. And the multitude said, this is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee. And Jesus went into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and said unto them, it is written, my house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. I want to read from John the same story with John chapter 2. let's see. I think I have that right. All right. And after this, starting at verse, after this, he went down to Capernaum, and he and his mother and his brethren and his disciples, and they continued there not many days. The Jews' Passover was at hand, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem and found in the temple those that sold oxen and sheep and doves and the changers of money sitting. And when he had made his scourge of small cords, he drove them all out of the temple, and the sheep and the oxen, and poured out the changers' money and overthrew the tables, and said unto them that sold doves, take these things hence. Make not my father's house and the house of merchandise. Who would that be today? Who would that be today? And he was violently opposed to them. That script that I just read where it says, and when he had made his scourge of small cords, that's a whip that he had put together. And he whipped the shit out of them, in other words, when he drove them out. And so he was clearly opposed to them turning his father's house into a den of thieves. So who would that be today? The merchandisers, the merchants, and so forth. The capitalists. It would be the capitalists who would conduct business anywhere with no moral values nor nothing. Their morals and their ethics is based on profit motive, and capitalism is their Bible. And he was opposed to them. He was opposed to them. And that is clear as night is from day. A den of thieves. And they have robbed and robbed and robbed and robbed. And they have cheated, 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 and cheated. Jesus, in that instance, today we will refer to in his actions as committing the revolutionary act. That's what that would be called today, committing a revolutionary act. Not only a revolutionary act, but a conscious decision to commit a revolutionary act by overthrowing the money changers. And he poured out the money. Because of the type of value that the money had. Unlike the value that we would consider today. But he made no bones about it. He understood their nature. And he was against their nature. Because how they conducted themselves. And this is what we see today as the system of capitalism, the capitalism. Those who conducted that type of business, we, or as conscious revolutionary, would refer to as vulture capitalism. Vulture capitalist. Vulture is a bird, and what is a vulture but a prey, a preyer on the prey. Those who are susceptible to the vulture, who become vulnerable to the vulture. You can correlate their business affairs to what is referred to as Wall Street. And on Wall Street, that is what they do. They sell and trade in commodities, and write slips and whatnot. This center is based in New York. And in the international world of finance, referred to New York as the finance capital of the world. You know, set in Manhattan, Wall Street. And so Jesus was against it, and he committed a revolutionary act. And how is it that Black leaders and whatnot, or those who've been rejected as such, now either they are firm believers in the Jesus that they know, or it makes for good rhetoric. But how is it that the conditions today collectively of black people, which is supposed to be addressed by black leaders, and the people are supposed to be following them and looking up to them for the solutions, the answer, or being guided or led on the right road, not possess the same type of energy or attitude or mentality as Jesus had went into the temple and cleansed it and overthrew the money changers table and everything. And you get that scripture in the church, and everybody in the church, from the rich to the poor, is in there going, amen, reverend. Preach, reverend, preach, right? About Jesus overthrowing the tables of the money changers. And you go and try to emulate Jesus and overthrow the tables of those who are the money masters of the day. They call the police on you and say you committed a crime. The same people who also profess to believe in the same Jesus of the New Testament. And so there's contradictions all over the place. But the bottom line is he was willing to overthrow them and end their hegemony or their hegemony, H-E-G-E-M-O-N-Y. The hegemonic rule, dominance over the masses of the people who he would go and break bread with. Those who were destitute as opposed to those who had the wealth and who knew how to accumulate capital, yet the conditions stayed the same because it was selfish ambition by certain cliques of people, which was a small minority of people. So he committed a revolutionary act. And this notion, from what I can remember, this meek, humble-looking, peaceful, soft-looking Jesus. And you would never know that that scripture existed because somebody has been controlling the narrative of how and what scriptures are going to be given to the masses of the people, the collective masses of the people. The New Testament Jesus himself realized that there was danger on the path, but he was unwavering. So how is it that the same people who could claim, make this claim to Jesus, say they care about their people, that I'm black, and accumulate capital, or being allowed to accumulate capital, stand by and watch their people wallow in political, economic, and social filth. And at the same time, expect their people to entertain, support, buy their brand. From the music industry, the film industry, the sports industry, and so forth. So how is that? And it's no more, no less than the people coming to understand that whether they black, brown, red, yellow, or white, that the exploitation is the same, which leaves the same condition. The same material conditions, which lead to hardcore concrete realities, and these concrete realities lead to what? Black debt and misery. And when you segregate it, resegregate it in the most sophisticated ways in which they refer to as gentrification today, that anger at some point will exercise itself. And when that anger exercises itself or rears its ugly head, then it can only rear its ugly head with the closest person that's near to it, and it looks just like you. And this is what they don't get you to see. This is what they avoid explaining to get you to understand it, to get you to see it first, and then you see yourself in the matrix. And this is how people have learned to transform their thinking, and therefore they transform their thinking. And a part of that, of course, is transforming their health. And so they were mentally, physically, and last but not least, spiritually healthy enough to topple the system that has kept things in place. So when some smooth-talking jive turkey comes along, like the brothers used to say in the 60s, and spend some gift for the gab for you, the more things change, the more they seem to stay the same. So he made no bones about that. He made a conscious decision to enter the temple and become the terror of the money changers and their corruption. And what more corrupt system than there is this one in America? America is the bastard child of Western Europe, featuring Great Britain. Great Britain is the bastard child of Rome, and Rome is the bastard child of the Greeks. And the Greeks are the bastard child of sheer and raw, naked barbarism. The next example we can use is Jesus and the rich man. Chose to come from the book of Mark. And by the way, the four gospel writers, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. This is Mark chapter 10, verse 17. let's see where I start. Okay. And when he was going forth into the way, there came one running and kneeled to him and asked him, "Good master, what shall I do that I may inherit eternal life?" And Jesus said unto him, "Why callest thou me good? There is none good but one, that is God. Thou knowest the commandments: do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, defraud not, honor thy father and mother." And he answered and said unto him, "Master, all these have I observed from my youth." And this is very instrumental. I'm gonna try not to draw a present correlation to that. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him and said unto him, "One thing thou lackest. Go thy way, sell whatsoever thou hast, and give to the poor. Thou shalt have treasure in heaven. Come, take up the cross and follow me." So it is clear that he had his position on the rich. He didn't treat them any special way because they had it all. And they lived and wore the finest of clothes and so forth and had servants and maids and everything. They were the upper class during his time. And, of course, during the time of the New Testament Jesus, it would be under the rulership, of course, the kingdom domination of the Roman Empire, Caesar, Augustus, and so forth, whom the month of August has been named. So his position against the rich, you can correlate that today in Marxist terms, in revolutionary language, as the white ruling class, as a black revolutionary. The white ruling class, the super rich, who own about 90% of the wealth, and they're just 1% of the populace. In other words, it's like saying you have one person who has 90 foot of space in front of him. And he can stand in front that 90 feet inside the, easily that 90 feet of space with no problem and have room, you know, to splurge, right? Whereas you take 90 people, 85 people, and try to fit them in 15 feet of space. You may have some trouble. And that trouble would lead to other trouble. And before you know it, what would you have? You would have such things as factionalism. Those who got would end up due to some term of treatment and would gel together. This is what you have in the different sets and whatnot, you know. Whereas those who were able to get in and stay in and be comfortable. So that's a problem. But what is that problem predicated on? It is predicated on the white ruling class, because the conditions wouldn't be possible without the situation that they create for their own selfish means. And so this sort of backlash, this sort of reaction over time with the Occupy Wall Street movement. And the question will be asked, is it a movement against the 1% or a movement against capitalism, which is steered by the 1%? And we must make that distinction, especially as black revolutionaries and being clear on the possibility of non-black allies, according to the laws of nature. There will be one if it's 10 in the room, but the relationship has to be clear from one. And so therefore, it is our duty and our responsibility to investigate and ask, is it capitalism that you oppose to, or is it the 1% you oppose to because they tax cheats, which in essence wouldn't make you no difference than him, because when he pleases you or acquiesces to your demands, then that makes you and him the same, because you didn't oppose the system which he had been steering, that you had been living under, and you had your beef over a class issue as a tax cheat. We say both of them must go. Both of them. And so him telling the rich man, because you think that you haven't done this and haven't done that, it correlates to this saying where I have a saying, you know, and forgive me for the I, but, you know, just a thing that, you know, I've learned to say, because I've been around people, you know, who sweat it, you know, they believe that because they're intellectuals, and that gives them a privilege, that gives them, you know, that they should be treated different, right? And you know, having these dialogues, conversations, whatever, and don't turn out in their favor. So I've learned to say, well, you just because you think you haven't stolen so much as a pack of annihilators, and that you go in the church or sit in the church every Sunday, that you somehow think you highly favored in the eyes of the Lord, or you think you got the inside lane. And again, that was the moral to the verse when Jesus was telling the rich man. That was the moral to the story when he was saying it to him. You know, and he thought, you know, because he hadn't done these things that Jesus had used as an example, right, that he somehow had the inside lane. You go back. Hold on. Okay. He somehow thought he had the inside lane, right, when Jesus said, thou knowest the commandments, do not commit adultery, do not kill, do not steal, do not bear false witness, defraud not, honor thy father and mother. And he answered and said unto him, Master, all these I have observed from my youth. And then Jesus smashes him with this. Then Jesus, beholding him, loved him and said unto him, one thing thou lackest. Go thy way, sell whatever thou hast, and give to the poor. That was his ticket in. If these Negroes find out Jesus is coming back this weekend, you'd see Oprah Winfrey out there in the hood on the south side handing out $100 bills. You'd see Michael Jordan out there with him handing out $100 bills to the same people he couldn't stand before. And you'd see the rest of them doing. They'd be handing out $100 bills. LeBron and whoever else, Steph Curry, they'd be handing out $100 bills if they knew that Jesus was coming back this weekend and looking for them. So it's going to have to take that in many instances, if not all. It may be most cases. Now, there may be some who doing it. But the point is that we recognizing it and we bringing it up because we're trying to get the people to understand something. That if the people have been part of the reason why they're able to live the lifestyles that they live, then it should be some reciprocity when the people come under attack. The people, for the longest, have been told to go to the voting polls. There's been a spinoff of saying black power, all power to the people. And those who wrap their main philosophy or their existence as activists around voting will say voting power. The voting power can only take you but so far. It has quick and immediate limitations that do not address the material conditions that lead to the concrete realities that black people collectively face on a daily basis. And so he, meaning Jesus, the New Testament, was the contradiction of the rich. And I can quite imagine that would have been something painstaking. We can even say to the point where his feelings must have been hurt because he thought he had done all these things, these wonderful things since his youth, that he hadn't committed adultery, he hadn't stolen as so much as a pack of knowledge, that he somehow thought he had the inside lane. But he forgot one thing. The very people that had been outcast, the very people that Jesus found himself in the midst of more than the rest of them. Which means that if Jesus had come back on the weekend that the MTV Awards is approaching, that he wouldn't be one of the ones sitting in the crowd getting ready to listen to Lil Wayne. And yet these same people collectively supposed to have a belief in the Jesus of the New Testament. It's like they want rain without thunder. People have been given for the longest, unselfishly, even in some of the churches, the people have been given of their hard-earned money. And some of these ministers, maybe some of them have a hustle like the rest of us and are living in mansions. And it would have to be the most severe form of selective amnesia. Or when Thanksgiving come around, then they can hand out some turkeys to the underprivileged in the middle of Harlem. The next thing I want to point out is the temptation of Jesus by what we know or the broader collectively as Satan, the devil, Lucifer, and whatnot. The Spanish people speaking people or Latin speaking people know him as Diablo. And it's interesting that the car manufacturing Italian company Lamborghini had come out with a new Lamborghini and called it, I believe, the Diablos, the Diablo, Lamborghini Diablo, and read at that, how subliminal. So the temptation of Jesus, we can get from Matthew chapter 4, verse 8. And along with this, of course, is, it starts off, you know, with Jesus having a fast for 40 days. I'll just start from the beginning. Then was Jesus led up the spirit into the wilderness, to be tempted of the devil. Two times, as a matter of fact. And when Jesus, and when he had fasted 40 days and 40 nights, he was afterward and hungered, meaning he was hungry. And when the tempter came to him, he said, "If thou be the Son of God, command that these stones be made bread." But he answered and said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeded out of the mouth of God." Then the devil taking him up into the holy city and setting him on the pinnacle of the temple, said unto him, "If thou be the Son of God, cast thyself down. For it is written, he shall give his angels charge concerning thee, and in their hands they shall bear thee up, lest at any time thou dash thy foot against a stone." Jesus said unto him, "It is written again, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God." Verse 8. And again the devil taketh him up into an exceeding high mountain, and sheweth him all the kingdoms of the world and the glory of them, said unto him, "All these things I will give thee if thou wilt fall down and worship." And Jesus said unto him, "Get thee hence, Satan, for it is written, thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve." What's the moral to the story here? The attempt to get Jesus to sell his soul in exchange for all the material luxury in the world. Again, he drew the line. There was no middle ground. There was no foot over here, foot over there, the gray area that we know it as today. And this is the dilemma that those who profess to get on their knees and thank Jesus for all the things that they have. The promotion, which means your paycheck increases by $100,000 and so forth. Now, there may be some who say, "Well, it appears to me that there's a this sort of hating, rather, those who have achieved success, material success. Perceive what you will. The whole point is that people have come along and have seen things and have grown up and have watched people make these claims of things and have projected these claims onto the very people who they want to emulate them. and come to find that it has nothing to do with the very person whom they want to attribute their success to. And it's clear as night is from day, you know. And so what comes to mind is one of the songs that R. Kelly had wrote. What is it again, the, you know, the whole world will lose your soul. And the young people see this kind of shit and they're saying, well, you're preaching this thing to me, but I see you doing the opposite of what you're trying to instill in me. So I won't sell my soul. There may be some say, look, I sold my soul and I don't want you to be like me. Like some of the older brothers may go to these juvenile concentration camps and speak to these young dudes who doing these little bids and tell them their story, how they once was out there and they did that and they come to try to save them. And it ain't nothing wrong with that. But it's trying to figure out how does this work? You know, how does it work? Either the devil exists or he doesn't. Either this shit is legit or it isn't. There's no middle ground. How it is accumulated is either legit or it isn't. In the system of capitalism, the word legal makes it legitimate, not from a moral standpoint or an ethical one. Look, let's leave a moral one alone. Let's just say ethically, it doesn't exist. This is why there are those who outwardly would feign to actually believe in that. But inwardly, they're saying, listen, all that heaven and hell shit is for the birds. Nigga, I'm not waiting till I die to get no heaven in the sky, no pie in the sky. I want mine now. I want to enjoy my shit now. I'm not waiting for that. And so therefore, you would have to ask, either this shit is legit or it isn't. You know what I'm saying? It is or it's not. And so what do we see? That's what we see. You know, the devil getting those amongst us to sell their souls with no problem. And so we say, okay, well, we not for sale. People's political parties not for sale. We'll get it how we live. We'll do what we have to do. We'll rub our two pennies together and make it happen. But the one thing that we know that we will have done, end up being on the right side of history. And we don't have to worry about whether or not we practiced the Jesus philosophy or the ideology of the New Testament Jesus. We don't have to worry about that. And we would think and understand that we would have more in common with him than a lot of other people who made the claim to him. They were walking contradictions. And these same walking contradictions didn't bother to uplift their people out of the conditions that they have been left in, left for dead. In the meantime, those same people would turn periodically to the niggas and ask the niggas, could they go to the voting polls so their man can get in? And that if he do, then this is what they're going to do. This is what he's going to do, paying promises and whatnot. And he would still have to do what Jesus told the rich man. because he didn't steal and he didn't rob and he didn't commit adultery and cheat on his wife, so the FBI or the CIA can come out against him or, you know, force him from office like they do periodically. They gain, you know, something on you and sit on it for a while and spring it at the perfect time because of the potential he or she may have had. But still, he would have to do what he do, what the person who he claims to owe his success to in the first place. So there's no middle ground. There's none whatsoever. And so we try to make sense of this. You know, everything that we've covered here would show that Jesus was a revolutionary. He had no regard for the upper class, the rich. He had no regard for the type of system that they was running because it was corrupt. It was a den of thieves and so forth. None whatsoever. He was totally against it. His relationship with the masses of the people, and particularly the lumpen, the outcast, the downtrodden, the neglected, the left behind, the left for dead. Those who were unable to afford what we would know today as medical treatment for an ailment, an operation to repair something. Those were his people. And this Jesus of the New Testament is similar to Chairman Fred, who was the National Deputy Chairman of the Black Panther Party, leader of Illinois chapter of the Black Panther Party, murdered December 4, 1969, 2336 West Monroe, in the wee hours of the morning. Had more in common with the New Testament Jesus than any of them who professed and claimed on him. And this is fact. Because he was clear on what the system was, who the people were, and the conditions that they were living in, under which they were subjected to, and that what the people needed to do, and how to get the people to that position, to that understanding through a political education, therefore which would drive them to do exactly what Huey P. Newton said when he said, power, stability, to define phenomena, make it act in a desired manner. And, of course, there's always the Judas who takes the 30 shekels of silver, which in that moment in time, in that era, was one William O'Neill. You had Chairman Fred, and you had the Jesus of the New Testament, you had William O'Neill, and you had Judas, one of the supposed disciples of Jesus who betrayed Jesus. Who backstabbed Jesus, who set Jesus up, who was executed, who was murdered by the same forces that allow certain segment of Black America to have access to material luxury and comfort. This, by the way, this fasting, as I said earlier, not only transforming oneself physically, psychologically, spiritually, but also getting back to some type of sane dietary laws. And we came from that. Fasting part of our dietary laws. And so the New Testament Jesus fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. The 40 represented the symbolical expression of trials and tribulation, the test of your will and your stamina, which means your dedication. And the 40 comes from the woman who goes through a complete process of 40 weeks or 10 moons. A cycle of 10 moons. And in that process, the woman goes through her trials and tribulations, her pains, birth pains in the end. Until new life is brought into the world. And this period of, you know, the men, you know, the husbands, you know, the partner, how I remember, you know, you know, I remember somebody saying, man, my wife the devil, you know, she, you know, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, you know, I'm scared to go home from work. You know, they were joking, I remember that. You know, so there's this period, you know what I'm saying? And that is where the Bible authors, writers of the books developed the 40 days and 40 nights. It stood for a test of one's stamina, a test of one's duration, such as being tempted and knowing how to resist. And in a revolutionary transformation of society, this is what we must possess as revolutionaries. In Vietnam, the United States would do these tactics as they've done all around the world where they've established themselves as an empire. They would play on the morale on the Vietnamese so-called soldiers, troops. And Ho Chi Minh recognized that. And he would have morale class in the middle of the guerrilla campaign. You can hear the bombs in the background, the artillery. You can hear the staccato, like Dr. Kali would say, you know. And he was clever enough to recognize the tactics, the mechanizations of the devil, of the opposing one, of the evil one. And so those are types of morals to the story, that if we possess that type of thing or emulated that, then we can achieve success in our liberation struggle. And of course, in every liberation struggle, it is inevitable that there will be casualties. Now, the last piece I wanted to add is the scripture where Jesus speaks about the soul. So, Matthew 10, verse 34. You know, he's speaking to his followers, his disciples, and he's instructing them. You know, he's giving them lessons in morale, how they will be persecuted, prosecuted, and the attempts made against their lives and whatnot. And he's instructing them on what we would call today no-fear classes. Overcoming fear, but the trials and tribulations of being his disciples until he got to the point where he says, think not that I am come to send peace on earth. I came not to send peace, but a sword. And that right there is the icing on the cake. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. In other words, we can interpret that as those who have claimed that they brought peace around the world by getting rid of Saddam and getting rid of Gaddafi and getting rid of Slobodan Milosevic over there in Czechoslovakia, whatever it was, Bosnia or whatever, right? You know, getting rid of these dictators and these tyrants and whatnot, that they're going to bring peace and democracy around the world. That peace and democracy around the world has been nothing but one of violence and oppression. So it cannot be any peace. So he could not bring peace to people who didn't know peace. So he had to bring the sword. And that is revolutionary. He didn't have any middle ground. He didn't try to persuade them, induce them to do right, to do the right thing, to appeal to a moral character that they didn't even have. Or have, he was very clear in what needed to be done. And in the modern days parlance, we know that as the revolutionary transformation of society. So the people can have some peace, and particularly black and brown indigenous people, not only here in America, but around the whole planet. Because capitalism kill us all if we don't stop capitalism. Chairman Fred that said that nothing like stopping fascism because fascism will stop us all. And he was very correct on that. And this is what we're facing, the most sophisticated form of fascism that we've seen. So according to the New Testament, those scriptures, Jesus would have been a revolutionary in modern parlance. And so for those who profess Jesus, Jesus was a revolutionary. Then that should be something that you should consider, at least. Because it's one thing to claim him, but it's another thing to at least try to emulate him, especially if you claim to love your people. And again, collectively, black people have been brought up in the church. And on that note, we say stay tuned next week, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern. For another show of In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm one of your hosts, Chairman Nat Turner, National Chairman of the People's Political Party, and my co-host is Brother Motherland, our National Minister of Defense, and our assault technician on the ones and twos, our National Minister of Communication, Sister Iman Oshun. And we say black power to black people specifically. However, we are not so narrow-minded to say all power to the people also, because the people should always have the power. And we say Uhuru, which in Swahili is something like freedom. Freedom through liberation. We out of here.
Peace. I'm called Professor X, the Overseer. In the early 1900s, a brother set out on voyage. His mission, black nationalism. His oath, freedom or death. In the 60s, brothers like Stokely Carmichael, H. Rap Brown, the mission, black nationalism. The oath, freedom or death. In the 90s, the mission, black nationalism. The messengers, X-Clan. The movement, Black Watch. The oath, freedom or death. By the way,
freedom or death, you shall all be moved. Vanguard, this is protected by the red, the black, and the green with the key city.
Abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funk and lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos where no time and space do exist. chaos. Mortals labeled me as a logical, mythological. They couldn't comprehend when I brought the word, a thick cold verb, a black steel nerve, teaching those actors and actresses who write a couple lines on what black is. Really? Then they labeled me a sin when a brother just speaks what's within. I guess I'm blacker than the shadow in the darkest alley that they're always scared to go in. Boo! I wear boots and beads, bags and braids, stick and scroll, raise the shade, walk in the light of the moon, but I've never been a Batman. African, call it black man. Brother, expect the African steps in your movements. Enhance for improvement. Grand funk, I knew a home for the phrase. Funk and less in the pathway.
Ready or not, here we
and cornbread. How can you act this? I exist on a plane where the jar is my brain. I'm living to retreat cells. Antenna my stick. Picture bigger. Native liquor. Figure. The pull of the trigger goes boom. Not boom. Not a bunch of sissy but saviors braver. The red, black, and green. It's just so much more than red, black, and green. You ask what I mean. But yet the sundown shades and life's a dream. Why too late? Oops. Upside your head. You drop through a bit like lead. Where you going? What's your speed? What's your pleasure? What's